This is a Standard Nerds podcast.
How'd you mind me now?
Hello and welcome to How Do You Like Me Now, the podcast where we go back and relive the golden years of kids' TV. I'm Will, with me as always is Liz. Hello, Liz.
Well, hi, sugar.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, a little
Dolly Parton thing there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's Dolly Parton, right? I thought, well, hi, sugar, was a thing that she says.
Yeah.
But I tried to, like, Google it, or YouTube it or whatever, because I wanted just, like, a clip of her saying it, because I was like, does she say, well, hi, sugar? Or does she say, like, howdy, sugar, or whatever? I was like, this is a well-known phrase that she does. And I Googled, well, hi, sugar. It gave me a load of links for diabetes. Google thinks I've got well high sugar. Couldn't find anything about Dolly Parton.
Should I be eating these donuts? No, mate, they got well high sugar.
Exactly. What's Google doing to me? Now I'm getting search results with, like, you know, information for diabetics. Google's worried about me because I Googled well high sugar. Anyway.
Did you put the comma in when you searched?
The comma?
Yeah. Well, comma, high sugar.
No, I didn't put a comma in. Do you put commas in when you do Google searches?
If I'm looking for a specific phrase, yeah. And I put it in quotation marks.
I mean, sometimes I do the quotation mark thing, but not comma. I don't think I've ever searched a comma.
You've got to search the comma, Liz. Otherwise, you end up with this kind of situation.
All right, I'll try it out.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks for the advice.
Pleasure.
It's your week, isn't it?
It is my week.
What are we watching?
This week, we are watching a cartoon that I...
It's always a cartoon with you.
This week is a cartoon. Next one I pick won't be a cartoon, I promise. This one, though, is a cartoon. We are going to be watching something that I can't remember too well, but it was an adventurous cartoon. It's a swashbuckling cartoon, Liz.
Okay.
This is Pirates of Dark Water.
What? I've never heard of that.
You're not? Okay. Well, this is good. This will be a voyage of discovery for you. There weren't very many episodes of this.
No.
Which is always a good sign.
That's a great sign, isn't it? Yeah.
But yeah.
They stopped making it incredibly quickly. Oh, good. I'm looking forward to it.
It was about a group of pirates on, like, an alien world who basically were racing across the seas to escape... the dark water, which was like almost like a virus, like spreading over the seas. And if you got caught in it, you died.
Okay, so the dark water isn't literally dark water.
Oh, no, it is literally dark water.
But it's a virus.
It spreads like a virus. It's like, it's kind of like...
What happens if you connect with the dark water?
You die.
You die.
I believe that to be the case.
A lot of death in this kid's cartoon, is there?
Well, I think there's a lot of escaping from death in this kid's cartoon. Right. You know, I think it gets introduced with some death, and then it's a case of, no, we must stay away from that thing. Unless, you know, they did all die, and that's why there's so few episodes.
Wow. Bleak.
Could be. I don't think it is.
Okay.
I can't remember too much else about the characters of this, the specifics, but basically there was, like, a crew of pirates... there was a major villain, I think, who was behind this whole spreading of the dark water, but their plan was to basically try and stop it happening and free the seas and everything else. But it had this kind of, like, mostly like orange and purple palette, like the skies were orange, which made it look quite post-apocalyptic, so it looked different from other things, so I kind of liked it.
I don't know why, but this is feeling like incredibly bleak. I don't want to watch this at all.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
So we're going to go away and watch some Pirates of Dark Water, and we will report back. Duncan, I'm blind! And we're back. So, Liz, the Pirates of Dark Water, swashbuckling adventure on the high seas. What did you think?
Was it?
Yeah.
This is so much less than the sum of its parts.
What? This has got so much going for it. As an adventure series, in an original world.
No, you know. Boo. Thumbs down. Thumbs down, Pirates of Dark Water.
Thumbs down on you, Liz. Thumbs down on you.
I did not enjoy this. I will tell you for why.
Tell me for why.
I fell asleep.
See, I thought you did.
Well, I was mostly trying to stay awake, but it did put me very near sleep.
That is criminal. And there are fans of this show, if any of them are listening to this, who are going to be offended by that.
I'm sorry to the fans. I'm sorry. But at the same time, I didn't make this such a boring show, did I?
This isn't a boring show.
It shouldn't be. Pirates are exciting.
So much happens in this show, though. I don't see how you can say this is boring. Right, so the first episode of this is a classic establishing the quest, setting out on a path. There's peril, there's swashbuckling.
I think this first episode is such a clear sign that they should have started it with the gang already being together on their quest.
Just
do a little quick summing up of what they're up to, but this whole episode drags because it's getting the band together.
Well, I mean, I don't know, because I think you can do a good getting the band together episode.
You can, but they didn't.
Whoa.
This isn't it, sir. It is not.
This is a good introduction of the characters, though.
I was bored. Let's take the characters, because okay. I'm not impressed here.
All right, okay. Let's start off with Ren.
That's who we start with, and yes, he is the main character.
He is the main character, Ren.
He's got very dark brown skin and very light blonde hair.
Well, yeah, because, you know, I can tell you for why.
And you, right, okay.
This is because he's living in a world that is dominated by seas, Liz.
Yeah.
So you've got to think the sun and the salt as I bleached his hair a bit.
Okay.
And he's got a tan from being outdoors all the time. He's got a hardy seafarer's tan.
But he's not a seafarer, he lives in a lighthouse.
I mean, he's a seafarer by proxy.
So yeah, he lives in a lighthouse.
Yes.
With an old woman.
Yes.
I believe her to be a woman.
I believe her to be a woman as well.
In this other
world, the dress gave it away for me.
In this other world thing, it's never clear to me if everybody's an alien or nobody's an alien.
Well, it's an alien world. It's the alien world of Myr.
Oh, Myr.
No, Myr, like mer, you know, French, the French word for sea.
No, mer is the French word for sea. What's Myr?
Myr is like, you know, just it's like a more fantastical pronunciation of it to make it not seem French.
It's like gold, frankincense and Myr.
yeah, exactly like that.
That, right, okay. So, yeah, they're in this world I don't really know, and he is the lighthouse keeper.
Right. Yeah. No. Well. Yes. He is. He's the lighthouse keeper. He's basically trying to, like, there's a storm going on. He's there trying to make sure the lamp stays lit so he can guide in this ship that's out at sea.
Yes. She seems very cross that he's up in the lighthouse trying to keep the lamp lit.
Well, I mean, I to be honest, I salute his efforts, but at the same time, I can see why she's angry, because he's there for 2 minutes and a wave basically destroys half the lighthouse.
But she seems to be saying, "Oh, you know, there's a storm. Don't go up and keep the lighthouse lit when there's a storm." Well, he needs to, love, because that's the time that people will be using it. It's important. Surely, if she also lives in the lighthouse, she understands what it's there for.
Well, maybe she doesn't. Maybe she doesn't. Maybe this is all just, you know... Cause
do we ever see her again?
Not as far as I'm aware, no. I think she's done with this.
Let's forget her. Because she doesn't know what a lighthouse is for, despite living in one. She's useless to us. So, Ren, we don't really understand the relationship there, but she's obviously some kind of like maternalistic figure without being a parent.
Yeah, I think she's like the nurse in Romeo and Juliet, you know, that kind of thing of like...
Sure, if you want to get literary about it, you know, you've gone quite highbrow. It's only the Pirates of Darkwater.
Okay, or April O'Neil in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, that kind of...
Okay, yeah, the listeners can get that. Yeah. Right, so anyway, he's you know, trying to keep the lighthouse lit. That's his job. And he sees a boat out there.
Yes.
Right? So straight away, there's peril. But it's about a character we haven't met yet, so I don't care.
But clearly it's going to be an important character, because it's a lone man in a boat moving towards this lighthouse.
Oh, clearly.
If it was an unimportant character, they'd just go, "Oh, there's a boat out there," and you wouldn't even bother animating it.
I wouldn't have bothered animating this whole show.
Outrageous.
Okay, so then the guy in the boat gets in difficulties.
Yes.
So Ren, our hero, who is bland as shit, decides to swim out and get him.
Yeah, after doing some parkour to get down the lighthouse super quick.
Yeah.
Acrobatics to, like, jump down 8 flights of stairs and swing on a pole.
He's like, "Oh, I better go out and save this guy." And so he goes
I don't know what you've got against Ren.
I don't like him. I don't think he's got any personality.
Outrageous. Yeah, he's the typical, like, hero.
Yeah, really typical.
No, but he's the hero, the standard hero. Got this. He's got to have the arc.
Standard.
He's got to go from naive, young, blinkered man, you know, who doesn't know what's going on, and develop into the hero he's meant to be, and the leader of his people, and the saviour of the world. He's going to save the world of Myr. That's what he's going to do,
Liz. That's his job.
He's going to become the saviour of Myr.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, he goes out to get the ship that's in trouble. It's the guy's now out. He's in the water. Yes. So Ren swims him back to the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And this old dude is at it.
Yeah.
He's a goner.
Yeah.
So he gives a message to Ren.
Yes, he does.
This whole scene confused me.
Right.
Because there's like a vision.
Yes, he basically...
But is it the old man's vision or Ren's vision?
No, it's Ren's vision, right. The old man has basically come there to try and find the heir of the lost Prince of Octopon. He's got to get a message to this lost Prince of Octopon, which is this city.
The city's name is Octopon.
Octopon, just to be clear.
Octopon. I do want people to get that because I want them to think if they had the chance to create their own TV show and they had the name, you know, of the city that was going to be the focus, that was everything was going to be about saving it, would they go with Octopon?
I mean, it is quite a distracting name.
It is, isn't it?
Whenever it comes
every time
up,
you hear it, you think, oh, Octopon.
It does kind of kill the flow a little yep. bit. Whenever they talk about Octopon, you go,
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. Anyway.
Primus says to Ren, not knowing who Ren is, look over there, what do you see? And it basically sees the ruins of Octopon, because Octopon is a ruined city now.
Ruined.
And then Ren, I presume by virtue of a storm and the fact he's next to Primus, says, no, wait, I see it restored. And he goes, ah, yes, you are the chosen one. You are going to save the world.
What he doesn't say is, oh, that makes you my son.
No.
And in the last, 20 seconds before I die, that feels like something I should mention.
Oh, but what a tragedy, though. To meet your father and then for him not to realise.
So what happens is much better. Is he says, right, I've got a message.
Yeah.
So the message is, Primus is dead, Alhambra, go ahead with this kid.
Okay. No one's called Alhambra in this.
Okay.
Alamar, Primus says, you need to go to Alamar and tell him that Primus is dead and, you need to go forth and collect the 13 treasures of Rule to save the world.
Because he's been waiting on that project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
They haven't just been getting on with that.
No, well, Primus is going to do it. Primus is in no shape to do it.
No, Primus round.
Well, because it's an ocean world. There's going to be boats everywhere.
No, you have lighthouses near, like, ports or somewhere that people are coming to.
Yes, there was a city there. The lighthouse is there. I don't know what Ren's been told.
So he runs a lighthouse.
Yes.
Purely for boats that come along and go, oh, I was looking for Octopon. Oh, no. Oh, that's shit. Ah, oh, well, lads, let's go.
Yeah, of course.
That's the only reason he's there.
Well, no, he's there because I presume he's been put there as safety and hiding because he's Primus's son.
Okay, so he's Primus's son, and he's let his dad just be dragged out to sea.
I mean, I do have a thing, because that's a slight flaw, because, the way the waves work, right, even if this is an alien world, if you put something in and it washes out, it's going to wash straight back on the next wave. It's going to take a while to get back out there.
That would have been a real creepy scene for them to include.
Just his father's dead body lapping up against the shore. And he's like, no, just keep pushing it out. Keep pushing it out to sea.
Wow, that would have been dark.
See? And that's why you don't animate that.
But I still find the next scene, like, he goes to the woman who lives in this lighthouse.
Yes.
And says, I don't know what he says. He says, I just dragged his ass out and he didn't make it. And what does he say?
Clearly he'd lost his mind. He said clearly he'd lost his mind.
Yeah.
And then she goes, no, he's Primus. He's ruler of Octopon.
He happens
and you're
to
his
be
son.
Your dad.
Yeah.
And he really, I would say this is the beginning of my problem with Ren, is he doesn't react at all.
Well, I mean, Liz, this is a father he's never seen. He didn't know. He's not like, oh my God, it's my long lost father. I haven't seen him in years. It's like, oh, well, that guy from the dad, I have no emotional connection to him. He was just an old man I pulled out of the sea.
See, I don't think you need to know the person to have an emotional connection to the fact that you had a father and you now won't know him.
But Liz, I think you can't...
So his dad is gone and all he says is, what is my role in this prophecy?
Yeah.
He's like a robot.
You've got to get going, Liz. You can't have him moping for an episode. You're complaining about it takes too long to get the band back together. You know, you can't have, like, 30 minutes of him going, woe is me, my father is dead, I only knew him for 30 seconds, and I let him wash out into the sea.
All I wanted was 1 second of woe is me. Literally a phrase. Like, oh, God damn. Ah, now I will never know my father. That's all I wanted. Just one reaction. A reaction.
You can get that when they're not in peril anymore. There's a storm going on.
He's not in peril. He's in a lighthouse.
No, he's not. He's out on the beach and then he gets back to the lighthouse.
Yes, he's back in the lighthouse talking to the old bird.
Yeah, and he's got to run. He's got to run, though, because they're going to be under attack shortly.
How does he know that?
Well, because...
Old dude didn't mention that.
No, because he's the Prince of Mare. It's a prophecy. He can sense these things.
He's the Prince of Mare.
Anyway, this does happen because we've got all this at the same time. Loth.
They were big on just making a sound and then go, I'd like, you know, the sea, it should be something that sounds like kind of, we could go with, oh, okay, yeah. The villain, it should be something that sounds like, bluh. We could go with, bluh. Okay, cool, yeah, yeah.
All right, what's the logic behind Octopon then on that one?
I don't know. I don't know. That's where they just got wild. They're like, I think we've done too many sounds. We should have something more complicated for the city. It should be like, but like related to like a sea creature, like, you know, like Octopom. And they were all like, yeah. And then they got back the next day and they're like, should I mention that that is a terrible name? Nope, nobody else has brought it up. I'll just keep quiet.
Outrageous.
We probably won't be cancelled. Oh, wait.
But anyway, I want to talk about Bloth. Though.
Okay.
Right, what do you think of Bloth, the main villain? Big, gigantic pirate?
He is. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he looks like an amalgamation of lots of the baddies, the classic baddies. He's big. He's kind of scarred and torn up. He's got bits of a moustache or something. That's a classic baddie.
Yeah. He's lumpy and very pale. He's very pale white.
Pale sort of greyish colour.
He looks to me like a chewed lump of chewing gum.
That's... harsh, but fair, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, carrying a giant gold sword and riding around on his massive ship made of bones.
I didn't love this show.
Right.
But I did love that boat.
It's a great ship, isn't it?
His ship, that's kind of all skeletal, all bony, I thought really looked good. And it's scary. And I would have liked it if he looked a bit more like his ship.
Mm.
If he was all skeletal and kind of...
like Skeletor.
Well, I maybe they were trying to avoid. I'm not sure on the timelines of all of these, but maybe you can't go Skeletor because it's too Skeletor. But I would have liked.
Yeah.
I thought it was Nibbler, like Nibbler.
No. Interesting fact, though.
Yeah.
Right. The guy who provides the voice of Nibbler is actually the same guy who provides the voice of Nibbler.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
That's. What?
Dead serious. Dead
How can
serious.
You be typecast as being various, like, nillers?
I don't know. It just happened. Bloth is voiced by Brock Peters, you know, of...
Brock Peters is a great actor.
Yeah.
He was... he's very high up in the Federation. But he was in the To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, and also provided the voice of Darth Vader, I think, for some of the animated, like, Star Wars stuff.
Did he?
Yeah, I read some of it. So he's there. You've got Tim Curry. Ren is voiced by the guy who played Danny in Friends. You know, the one with the beard, and they bug bomb him in the basement.
Yeti.
Yes, the Yeti with the inappropriate sister. Yeah, he's the voice of Ren.
Okay, I can't get that. But
no, but again, I think that's
if you
know,
say
this is,
so.
Well, that was like this is like 1980s, and that's like late 90s when he's in Friends. So you know, he's like it's basically him as like a kid versus him as like an adult.
Okay,
you know?
Right.
Harder to tell the difference. But that's there's some great voice down there. Roddy McDowall voices someone in this in like the early episodes.
Roddy McDowall.
Yes, Roddy McDowall.
I can't. Think who he is.
Yeah, do I mean Roddy McDowall or Malcolm McDowell? I might mean Malcolm McDowell.
Right, okay, I still can't think who... I know who Roddy McDowell is.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think who either Roddy or Malcolm McDowell would have played in
okay,
this.
Okay, well, I can't remember either, but they did voice someone in this.
They did, jointly now.
No.
Now we're saying they shared the part.
No, Roddy McDowell. Which one's Roddy McDowell?
Roddy and Malcolm McDowell are totally different. Roddy McDowall is the guy from Planet of the Apes.
Right.
Although that's not a good example because he is one of the apes. He is... Roddy McDowall is the vicar in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Right, okay, yeah.
You know he arrives when all the clothes are getting going around? He arrives on his bicycle and looks shocked?
Yeah, and his hat flies in, then
that's,
his hat flies...
That's
yeah.
the guy.
Okay, right, with you now.
But again, I don't know who he is in this.
No. Well, I think he provides the voice of Niddler in some episodes, and then other episodes they switch to the guy who provides the voice of Nibbler later on in Futurama.
You're just really confusing me now. Back to Niddler.
Right.
It is Niddler.
It is Niddler, yes.
Yes. So he's a kind of red parroty monkey hybrid. Is he a mutant?
I presume so, yeah.
They mention mutants at one point, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of mutants on this world. I think most people are mutants.
But I also picked up on some mutant phobia.
Oh,
because
right.
Because they threw that out as an insult. They're mutantists. They're prejudiced against mutants.
Anti-mutant.
An anti-mutant.
Mutantists. Mutantists is now the official phrase for
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, I mean, but this is the thing. So Niddler comes into the lighthouse, captures Wren, and takes him back to Bloth.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, it doesn't take long for Wren to immediately be captured.
Yeah, there's no time for him to mourn his father's death, Liz. He's, you know, he's captured and he's off his way on his way to Bloth.
So he has an encounter with Bloth quite early on.
Yeah.
Where, Bloth doesn't know who he is straight away.
No.
And so in my head, I'm going, don't tell him who you are.
No.
Obviously don't say that.
Keep it quiet.
Keep that quiet.
Give him a fake name.
Yeah, fake name, just say, don't know anything about it, don't know what you're talking about, mate,
yep.
Let me go.
No.
Straight away confesses.
Yeah, he does.
He's like, Primus was my father, and I am going to capture all the 13 treasures of Rule before you can, bahaha. Oh, yes, you do have me captured.
Oh, that was, I'd have just gone, no, mate, I'm just a simple lighthouse keeper, this is all a misunderstanding.
All a big misunderstanding.
You wanted the other lighthouse keeper on the northern side of Octopon.
Because the danger here
mm-hmm.
is that Bloth wants to throw him to the constrictors.
Yes, the constrictors, which lives in the bowels of Bloth's ship.
Which is a kind of...
It's kind of like the Star Wars like monster in the trash compactor.
Yeah.
But it's got all... And the Sarlacc, it's got multiple heads in it.
We never really see it properly, but
no.
There's bits of it coming out. It's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
You don't want to be thrown in there.
Unfortunately, Wren immediately figures a way out of this bone pit that it lives in, which is to climb up the sides. And then squirts it with the oil from the lighthouse.
Yes, I mean, he's lucky to that he is a lighthouse keeper because he has some oil to set it alight. But it does seem like a design flaw that all of the walls are basically a ladder because they made them out of bones. Now, that if I'm going to make my torture pit, I'm just not going to make it a ladder. You know, that's just me.
See,
that's just me and my torture pit design philosophy.
You know, smooth walls. Smooth walls so no one can escape.
Yes,
it's
obvious.
Plus, more wipe down. Much easier.
But he's gone with the aesthetic, hasn't he? He's gone with the bone aesthetic. He's just like Bloth. He's like one of these Instagram influencers.
His whole thing.
Everything's about the look. He's not thinking practically.
See, here's a question, though. Right, Wren gets his oil out of a pouch. Now... If I were a lighthouse keeper, right, presumably the only thing I'd have to light with that fuel would be the light in the lighthouse.
Yeah.
I'd want to keep that oil nearby. I wouldn't want to be carrying it.
I would say that's his that's his travel oil.
That's his travel oil.
In case he's out and about and he sees a lamp that's out.
Right, okay.
And he wants to always be prepared.
Like he's a travelling lighthouse keeper. He's just going around. He's got a patch.
Well, maybe he's doing the other rooms in the lighthouse and he sees a little lamp and he goes, oh, that light's out. Not having that, mate. Sort it out right now.
Where's he getting all this lamp oil from?
Well, from the main... But he's a lighthouse keeper. He's got to have some lamp oil, hasn't he?
Yeah, but enough to be going around using like lighthouse-grade lamp oil on his household fittings and fixtures.
What the shit is lighthouse-grade lamp oil?
I mean...
Don't sit there and pretend you know about the grades of lamp oil.
All I'm saying, right, is it's got to be a pretty sturdy lamp oil, right, to set a constrictors on fire when that thing is soaking wet, right?
You know nothing of this. You're making it up.
I know nothing of lamp oil, all right, I'll admit it, but I'm just making an assumption here. It's all I can do based on the evidence in front of me. Anyway, so he's escaped from the constrictors.
Well, he escapes because he does do the fire bit, but also because Niddler saves him.
Yes, he does, because Niddler's fed up with Bloth. And
Niddler mutinies purely because he's hungry.
Yeah, and Bloth won't give him any food.
This is his whole thing, Niddler.
Yeah.
Is hunger.
Yeah.
It becomes somewhat of an irritating character trait.
It does, but I think you've always got to have that in that you've got...
You've always got to have an irritating character.
You've got to have a minor character who's got like a very juvenile or minor sort of thing that they want, you know. Like, you think in Animals of Farthing Wood, it's like Mole always wanting food, you know. It's like in Mask, T-Bob wanting to, you know, do whatever the hell he wants to do. You know, it's that kind of thing. You've got to have a character, a fairly minor character, who's got, like, a flaw, which is always like, oh, they're going to get everyone into trouble because of this. You know, if they could just calm down for 5 minutes, we'd be able to solve this thing. But no, they've gone and got off into trouble because he wanted a sandwich.
What I would say to you is you don't need that character, and that character annoys everyone, and that actually if you wrote that character with a more believable motivation, actually they wouldn't be so much of a pest.
You and I have just fixed 80s cartoons.
Yep, absolutely. I think I've watched enough now over these weeks that I've started to see all the formulas and it's all coming together. Like a big, like the big board where you put all the little bits of string between all the bits, and all of a sudden you can see patterns that no one else can see. That's me doing this podcast.
Like it's a true crime thing, and you're trying to solve.
No, I can see all the patterns. I can see the patterns. They're speaking to me. They're speaking to me on levels that other people don't see. Anyway, well,
this is good because there'll be so many more cartoons.
Oh,
that
I'll have lost it.
That you'll have to get, you will get to test your theories on.
Right. So anyway, the next stop is Alamar, isn't it?
Yes, Alamar, and this is a weird. This bit's drawn out too long. Right. I'm going to say this.
Well, I told you this whole thing's drawn out too long.
No, just this bit, right? Okay. Because he comes into this thing with Alamar and sees this bloke there and goes, "Ah, Alamar, I've come to see you." And the guy goes, "Ah, I'm not Alamar. Go through that door." And then he's like, you know, and then he's talking to this giant dinosaur like thing, and he's like, "Ah, oh, please remove your beast, Alamar. No, I am. Just have him go in, talk to the guy."
Well, no, but the thing is, he goes, "Call off your beast," to this I thought was a dragon. And the
See,
beast.
I didn't think it was a dragon.
Well, it breathes fire, Will.
But it hasn't got any wings.
Okay. But anyway, he says to it, you know, call off your beast. Or he's shouting that out to Alamar, and then it says, "I am Alamar." And I think they're making this sort of point about perception, and you shouldn't assume things, but it seems entirely unnecessary. It's like, "Oh, you thought I'd be a man, but I'm not a man."
Yeah, he goes, "It is
But he
not
doesn't
only...
mention what he is, but he is clearly a dragon, a fire-breathing dragon.
He goes, "It is not only men who dictate the fate of this world," which is another one of these, like, you know, anti-mutant sentiments in there. Of, you know, because I presume he's some kind of mutation from a talking dragon / dinosaur.
He's just a dragon.
But why he can't would he be a dragon.
What do you mean?
He hasn't got any wings.
I don't think that's necessary.
I think that if you're a fantastical dragon, I think you've got to have wings. I think if you don't have wings, you're a worm at best.
What? A worm? No, you think he's a fire-breathing worm?
No, like worm, like W-Y-R-M. You know, that kind of
What's
worm.
That?
That's like, you know, it's like a thing. It's a whole thing.
What thing is it?
It's like a Nordic sort of Norse mythology thing.
What's going on?
You know, I'm gonna annoy some Viking fans now, but you know, it's that kind of thing. You know, I think in order to be in a fantastical setting like this, to be a dragon, you've got to have wings.
We don't even know what setting this is because we don't know what planet it is, whether these are aliens.
It's the planet of Myr. We've been over this. it's alien world. The skies are fucking orange.
Okay, so alien dragons don't have wings, Will.
Okay, well, maybe he's not a dragon at all. Maybe he's just an alien. An alien Alamar. Okay. Alamar the alien.
Okay, Alamar the alien. So anyway, he has a fucking terrible rhyme that he cracks out.
Oh, God.
That he's supposed to explain. I presume all of the exposition for this episode was put into that rhyme. And yet it is so boring, I can't listen to it.
It's amazing. He breathes.
It goes on and on. It's about 8 stanzas.
It's huge. He breathes fire onto a wall, and for some reason, this fire just suddenly turns into nice, neat blue letters, evenly spaced, straightened out, like it's been typed.
Yeah, but there's always a rhyme, isn't there? But it's like usually it's like two lines, four lines that gets to the point of the thing. This is just on and on. It's like, find the things to fix the thing, find some more, and then it'll be better.
Word for word, perfect.
Yeah.
I didn't write it down.
Honestly,
but that's what it
honestly,
is.
No one wrote it down. We're not writing it down. They made it up on the spot. So he tells him the rhyme, but Captain Bloth has followed him.
Yeah.
Them, and so he comes to crash the party. Doesn't he?
He does.
He's smashing shit up, but Alamar. He knows the, you know, the prophecy or whatever is Ren. He's very selfless.
Yeah.
So he goes, right, I'll fight these geezers. You nip off and you'll be all right.
You pop off, son.
Pop off, son.
He gives him the compass, which is going to show him the
way. Oh, yes, he's got a shiny compass.
Yeah.
And he says, I'll tackle this, slip out the back way, right? So Ren, being an absolute dork... Right. What does he do? He watches Alamar starting to get knackered, and then he goes, "Oh, we better go back and help." And so Alamar says, "It's too late for me. You know, you should have gone when you had the chance." Like, honestly, that is a classic, isn't it? If somebody sacrifices themselves to give you the chance because your mission is the most important, you don't go back and go, "Oh, but I want to help. I want to help."
Liz. What on earth are you talking? Of course you go back to help. That's the whole point.
They sacrifice themselves.
No, it's the heroes. They sacrifice themselves if they're going to disappear under a swarm and that's it, they're gone. And even then the hero has to be pulled away by his friends. He goes, no, I have to go back. It's like, no, it's too late for him, right?
That's what happens, Will. No. He says it's too late for me.
Yeah, but there's no one to pull Ren back. Nidler's not going to do it.
Nidler's right? Barely a character.
So he goes back. And I'll argue, Ren, he knocks eight pirates into the water with one shove. He knocks eight the other way with another shove and picks up...
Implausible. Why would Ren be able to do that when a dragon couldn't?
This dragon's very out of shape. He's been living in this cave too long, you know. He's lost all his muscle mass. Whereas Ren, he's a hardy lighthouse keeper. He's doing parkour every day.
If that dragon has been knocking about in a cave all the time, he should have been keeping fit. He's got nothing else to do. He's in lockdown. Should have been doing his Joe Wicks or whatever, shouldn't he?
Definitely on his Joe Wicks. But anyway, so... Alamar is saved, and Ren and Nidler escape properly this time, and they end up in some...
So Alamar is actually all right.
Yeah, I think Alamar's all
so
right.
So, again, this part was pointless.
No, because he went and got the compass.
He's got the compass now. So the compass points out, like, a light, which shows you where your first jewel is. It's all about collecting the jewels.
The treasures.
Treasures?
Treasures, yeah. They're not all jewels.
Oh, so, I'm so sorry... I'm so sorry, fans of Pirates of Dark Water. I thought they were jewels. What other treasures are there?
Well, there's like a cup, there's like a brooch, there's like a necklace. They're all kinds
of
treasures.
Two of those were jewels. Anyway, let's move on. So his first port of call...
Is a port. Oh, no, that worked out.
Yes. Nidler wants some food. Is that what they're there for?
Yeah, well, yeah, no, they're there to try and find a ship because obviously they need transport. Because it's a world covered in oceans. So, you know, they've got to go. There's 20 seas on this thing. Not seven seas.
It's a wretched hive of scum and villainy, and they need transport to Alderaan.
Yes, so they go and find.
A transport off of this damn world. It's a place where they can find something.
Yeah, and they find a Han Solo type. I mean, very loose.
Oh, this is probably the loosest Han Solo type we've come across. He's got a ponytail in the middle of his forehead.
Yeah, it's a look. It's a look.
It's not a look I care for.
What about the tash? Because he's got a glorious like handlebar tash.
The tash I think is fine.
I mean, it's bordering on Fu Manchu. It's great. And that's Ioz.
Is it?
Yes, Ioz.
I'll be honest, I didn't particularly get that name.
No.
They said it a few times and it was always like, Moos, Ioz. And I wasn't quite the same any of the times. I couldn't get it.
Is that there with Mer and Blur for you?
Mer, Blur, So,
it's like someone's written these character names down while someone is shouting them through a wall.
Yes.
The writer was last draft of script. The writers are locked in their room. Mm. Quick, we need you to finish off the script. Okay, I need character names. All right, go with those.
Yeah, whatever. If you say so, mate.
The only one who managed to get was Octopon, because he yelled that through the keyhole.
Octopon. Oh, every time. So we're also, we encounter two characters at this point.
Yes.
There's a sexy waitress.
Oh, yes, a sexy waitress.
A sexy waitress with a large bill of fare.
Yes, she has got a large bill of fare. People are commenting on how large her bill of fare is.
Yes, it's not a phrase I've heard before.
No.
They mean menu.
They do mean menu, but menu sounds too pedestrian. Bill of fare, I mean, isn't great choice either. You just wouldn't have that scene. You just have them bring over like a massive plate of dishes and go, wow, they have a lot of food in this place.
They have a lot of fare.
Not they have a lot of choices. Should I get that with custard, cream or ice cream?
Because they never end up eating.
No, they don't.
Much to Niddler's disappointment. Anyway, so... But
the woman is called Tula.
Tula, we don't find that out at this stage, but I think it's obvious that she... Well, it's obvious because she was in the credits that she's going to be one of the characters.
Yeah. So, that was a big giveaway for me.
Ioz says to her, this is men's business, off with you, wench. Which is quite strong on the sexism.
It is strong on the sexism. It's not okay. Ioz, I think he's got a bit of a... He's quite a sexist man, because when they... After this, obviously they steal a boat... And then Tula reveals that she's stowed away.
Oh, whoa, you're skipping loads there.
Sorry.
Whoa, cool your boots.
Roll back.
I need to figure out why I wrote down 3 meals a day and I promise not to pluck you bald.
Right, I think that is what Ioz promises to Niddler.
Yes.
Yes, because Niddler's like, maybe we shouldn't get... This guy doesn't seem like a good captain. What are you going to give us? Are you going to feed us? And he goes, yeah, 3 is that promise, monkey bald, which is a threat to Niddler. And he goes like, brah, or whatever monkey noise.
Yes,
monkey
he does make that noise. I think that's correct. So, yeah, so they decide to steal this boat.
Yes.
But he doesn't actually tell Wren that he's stealing
it. He says it's his boat.
He says this is the Wraith.
Yeah, great name.
I would say that is not the name of the hero's boat.
I think it's a great name for a boat, though. Yeah, I agree, it's not the hero. You need the hero's boat to be something like the Light Runner or something like that.
The Light Runner?
Yeah,
something like that. Oh, okay. Yeah. Golden Rod.
The Sky Piercer.
It's, you know, that. Sky Piercer. Well, yours are weirdly sexual.
The Wave Cutter, you know, one of those kind of things. It's okay. Got to be a...
okay, well. But the Wraith straight away says to me that this guy is not to be trusted. If he said, oh, my boat's called the Wraith. No, but that's the villain's name.
But I do think that's a good pirate boat name. Like, that's...
I suppose so, because the issue here is the show's called Pirates of Dark Water.
Yes.
And the villains are pirates.
Yes.
But also the heroes are pirates.
Well, I think the heroes become pirates.
Everyone's a pirate.
Well, the thing is, maybe Wren isn't a pirate to start off with.
He's he's a lighthouse keeper.
A lighthouse keeper, we've established this. And Tula is a waitress, and Niddler is a bird. And Ioz is, you know, a sailor. But in stealing the boat, which is an act of piracy, they become pirates. Because they're not returning that boat.
No, I was following it. Yeah. I was following it. This is what I'm saying. They have to steal the boat, because they have to make these characters pirates.
Yes.
Because otherwise they're just people on a quest who happen to be on water.
Which is not a good title for
this terrible
show.
Title. So he steals he says to Wren that it's his ship, but as soon as they're leaving the port, it's obvious that they are stealing it.
Yes.
But that you've got to do what you've got to do.
Oh, absolutely. You've got the world to save. You know, you're not going to be worried about one piddling boat.
Is he saving the world or is it just Octopon?
No, he's saving the world, Liz.
Okay, I thought it was just Octopon.
No, Octopon is part of this, but he's got to save the world. You know,
he's got to save.
He's not. Yeah, he can't just look out for Octopon and then go fuck everyone else. You know, that's not okay.
So then we cut to. We cut to what's his name?
Block. Ioz.
Ioz, saying, we've been 5 days at sea, and now you tell me the map is fake. Right? So Wren has been a bit cagey and said that we're following this map, when really he's following his magic compass.
Yeah.
Right? So if that's what he said, 5 days at sea.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tula, who's this waitress, bursts out of a lower compartment, and they are surprised to see her, because she's stowed away.
For 5 days.
And this scene suggests that she has been in hiding for 5 days. So she has been in there just shitting in her little hole, just drinking her own piss. I don't know.
Oh, God. Right,
not eating.
Drinking her own piss?
What? She hasn't been seen by any of the characters on a small boat for 5 days.
Right.
What a state she would be in.
There's 3 characters on this boat. They've all got to sleep at some point. Niddler's not watching anything. She can sneak around to her heart's content at night.
Right. You know nothing about boats.
What?
Because they... I swear to God, boats, right? They don't all go, oh, it's getting late, isn't it? Yeah, we should all turn in. And all go to sleep at the same time. No. You do it in shifts. The dog watch. You don't go, God, do you fancy turning in? Oh, yeah. Oh, I've had enough. It's a long day at sea, isn't it?
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, right, they will all sleep at various points and leave one of them on watch, right?
Yes.
It's a big boat. One of them can't watch the whole boat. All she could do is dodge one person in. And if that one person is a monkey bird who's obsessed with eating, she can get past him no problem at all.
If you say so.
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
I mean, here's my question. How did she get on that boat without them noticing in the first place?
Yes, because it's not even their boat. So no. How would she know that they were going to steal that boat?
Exactly. Sneaky. Very, very sneaky.
Doesn't make sense.
But, you know, Isles is very unhappy because he sort of says, and now there's a woman on board.
Yeah, it's bad luck.
More sexism from Isles.
Well, yeah, it's all lies, this stuff, because there were female pirates, yeah. Like in the real life.
Yeah, Anne Bonny and the other one, I can't remember her name.
Yeah, that, yep. Just those two, was it?
Those two, do I can think of, well, my head.
Well done on that. Just standing up for representation of women. There were these two. That was it. In the history of pirates.
Okay, you name some female pirates.
I just said that there were female pirates.
Yep.
You were the one that claimed there were only two.
No, I didn't claim there were only two.
And that you can only name half of them.
No, I didn't claim there were two. I said there's two I can remember.
Oh, yeah. There was Anne Bonny and the other one.
Yeah, 50% success rate off the two that I could remember, okay?
Okay. So...
So, we have this whole thing where they're now sailing towards, like a lighthouse at sea where this gem is.
Okay.
And they're being chased by Bloth. But they're on a weird thing where it's like a river above the sea.
I don't understand what you're saying. If I saw that, I didn't understand it, and so I didn't write anything down about it. But it's the end of the episode right now.
It's the end of the episode, yeah.
And we haven't seen any dark water.
No dark water.
We've seen some pirates, and we've spent a long time getting together a group of characters without establishing anything about their personalities. I don't know anything about Tula.
No.
I know barely anything about Isles other than the raging sexist. I know nothing about Ren that I like. He bores me. The only thing I know anything about is Niddler, and that's his one personality trait is hunger.
What would you say if I told you that Tula was an ecomancer?
I would say, I don't know what the shit that is, but I don't like it.
I thought you'd say that. I'm not entirely sure.
Now, why did you say, I thought you'd say that? Because you know I don't like being predictable. I don't like you predicting my behaviour.
Because nothing about this you like. Nothing about anything that I pick you like.
That's true, but, you know, Tula's a very good-looking lady. I might have liked her.
Yeah.
Tell me what an ecomancer is, so that I can tell you...
I don't know exactly. She can do some kind of magic around water and, like, air, elemental magic, I think.
Okay, well, I don't like that. But I knew that she had some sort of magic, because in the second episode, she has a scene where she goes... She puts her head to her temple. She might as well swoon. She goes... Ah, death, danger, which is a classic, will give the woman some kind of psychic, emotional power.
Empathy. She's got the empathetic powers.
She's got the magical woman power of empathy.
That's what they do. But
it was clearly, not just normal empathy. It was magic, because she sort of, she was vague about it and clutching her temple.
No one really clutches the temple with non-magical empathy.
Exactly. Thank you.
I do want to say one last thing about the first episode, though, is you get this great little line at the end after Niddler gets this gem, which is the first treasure of Rule.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe I nearly skipped that bit.
They're all there like, you know, for adventure, for treasure, for Octopon, which is a terrible note to end this on.
No, what we end it on is, for crying out loud, when are we going to eat?
I didn't even write that down.
Which, if Niddler hadn't added, when are we going to eat, then that would have been me. Just to the end. For crying out loud.
Oh, my goodness. I think, you know, that whole thing is ruined by Fur Octopon.
Yeah, Octopon ruins a lot of this. I'll be honest, I thought it was a weak start, that first episode. But going into the second one, I was prepared for it to get better, because I thought... They've done a bad job of, like, dragging out getting the characters together. But once the characters are together and they get onto the main format of the show, which is tracking down the treasures, then I was like, I'm ready for that. I'm ready for that to be good.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
What? Whoa. Hold your horses, right? Because this is, for me, right? Yeah, okay. I'll give you a little bit that you could have more swashbuckling in that first episode, right? You've got a degree of swashbuckling. It'd be good to have more.
You want more?
I want more swashbuckling, yeah. But I think there's still good establishing. There's good action. There's, you know, sea battles and there's firing cannons and stuff and magic and, you know, dinosaurs slash dragons. You know, this has got a lot of promise. A lot of promise coming up. I will say about this second one, right?
Yep.
They have changed animation studios a few times in this.
Yep.
And now everyone's drawn a little bit weird.
A different. Different.
I tell you what it is, right? Everyone... Because they're drawn slight, not no one's ever drawn face onto the camera.
It's rare for cartoons to have much face on animation. You need the...
So they're a bit of a tilt, right?
Yeah.
But one eye looks normal. The like, you know, in Futurama,
right?
Where Leela gets like a second eye stuck onto her head.
Yeah.
And it looks really weird.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of immediately.
Wow.
All these like second eyes, which are like go, like just a tight, like a smaller than the main eye, looking a completely different direction, appear to be just stuck on in the wrong place.
That is a very good point, and does not speak that highly of the quality of animation that we have moved to. It's been a downgrade, not an upgrade. Let's say that
it has, which is a shame. I mean, in all of these, obviously, you spend your money on the intro and on the first episode because you want it to look good, right? But you don't want the quality to tail off that much. That this looks. I mean, at this point, the characters aren't looking... Bloth doesn't look as good. Yeah. None of the characters look as good. The ships don't look as good.
But how many in the original animation studio? Because it's not a long-running thing.
No, this has 21 episodes total.
Yeah, but how many look good?
Oh,
five
at least, right? Right. There were five they did as like a mini-series. And then they decided, no, we'll make more of these. And then it basically didn't work out and they cancelled it. So this actually, this doesn't end with them having found all the treasures. This is another one like Jason the Wheel Warriors.
Yeah, so there's 13 treasures. So it's a finite amount. So in their original run, they can't have found very many at all.
They found eight.
They found eight? No, because this was, what episode did we watch?
This is episode 13.
But they have only got seven.
No, in the whole run, whole 21, they find eight.
Okay, yeah.
Right, so this is the, I think they find some, they lose some. At the end, they think they've got eight of them, right? But they have restored Octopon. They do that partway through.
Oh, well, that was lucky.
Yeah, so they managed to restore Octopon, which, you know, is all right.
That was, well, great.
But this is the thing, this is, you know, still they go on to save the rest of the world. So it's not just about, you know, Octopon
very noble.
For the Octoponians.
Oh, you know, very noble.
No, it's Octopon.
You've
for the
world.
You've
got to think about others. You've
absolutely.
Got to think about others.
Yeah, that's it.
So
we've had Tula's sort of psychic vision of danger and death.
There's an incident now. I think this is just with Bloth. I don't know what's going on, but there's a glider.
Yeah, basically
a hang glider.
Yeah.
Can you just describe that scene, because I won't do it justice on purpose, so you should do it.
Okay. Basically, Bloth ambushes them.
Yes.
They're trapped in a cove. To get away, they convert part of the ship, transform it, if you will.
Yes.
So that the sail, because the sail rotates around so that it can catch the wind more easily, and it will also come off and become a hang glider.
I'll be honest. I found that a little bit absurd. That didn't seem a likely thing for a pirate ship to do.
Well, I mean, you know, this is an alien pirate ship, Liz.
It felt very much that they were going, they shouldn't just be pirate ships. Kids are bored now of pirate ships. This pirate ship should transform. It should have a detachable part that we can say on the toy comes with detachable hang glider.
Of course it should, Liz. All toys that have bits that come off them, bits that transform, bits that change, are better than toys that don't. Right? That's just a fact of life.
I kind of don't feel that way about toys, and also don't feel that that should be the driving force behind storytelling.
No, I'm there for it, okay? If you want a doll's house, right? Do you want a doll's house that doesn't open at all? But the only thing that opens might be the door. No, you want to be able to open up the whole doll's house and play with the doll's house, right? No one wants just a house, right? No one wants just a solid house to play with.
Are you familiar with the concept of a doll?
Yes. Are you familiar with the concept of Action Man, where you can take bits on and off him? Or the $6 million man with his vision?
Yeah, but I had a Barbie, and all you did was strip her naked. Nothing else.
But see, this is bits that come off. Didn't you also have one of those Barbies that went in the bathtub?
Yeah. No.
Okay. No. Fair enough.
No, I didn't.
I had an Action Man that did that. An Action Man did the backstroke.
Really?
You could wind him up, and he would do the backstroke.
That's not the manliest stroke.
Well, no, but it's the easiest one to like to
do in the bath, right? Yeah, I know.
He's not going to do butterfly, is he? I mean, what kind of toy mechanism are you going to put in to get an Action Man to do butterfly? Right?
Indeed.
You can't give that to kids. You can't give kids an undulating Action Man.
I just think that Action Man wouldn't have employed the backstroke that often. I don't think that's the best way to get where you're going.
No. Action Man would have done the backstroke all the time. Think about it. Obviously, this. It's a dual-purpose thing. One, you're travelling through water, and two, you're keeping an eye for reconnaissance planes overhead.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Lots of uses there.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're doing front crawl, you're not going to see anything that's flying overhead, are you?
No.
Or you can be able to see a submarine underneath you.
You're right. Yeah, I'm converted.
See, this is why Action Man does the backstroke.
Okay. That's one mystery solved.
Yes.
So, Tula, she's the lady, she gets, she's lost in the dark water.
Oh, she does, she falls into the dark water.
And, obviously that's the end of her, so they go, we'll avenge her.
Yeah.
She's goner.
Yeah.
She is a goner. What? Absolutely. No way that anything can happen. She is lost.
It's been well established. Anything that touches dark water dies.
Absolutely. That is fundamental to the concept of the dark water.
Yep. Right. It swallows anything, destroys it, kills it, stone dead. That's it.
That's what we know about dark water.
Yes. Now, it's Chief Wilson, and obviously this, you know, this puts
They
Ren...
have no time to mourn.
Oh, no, not at all.
They've got to get on with things.
They have, but
they say we'll avenge her, but then they move on very quick.
Well, because they're in peril, Liz.
Oh,
You know, but they're captured, and, you know, Ren is inconsolable, right?
Yeah.
Ren is, he doesn't know what to do. He's lost.
Is that the emotion?
Yes. Inconsolable, he's lost. You know, he's practically catatonic with depression and, you know, with loss and grief.
Mm,
you know, so he stops doing anything. For some reason, I've written Chongolongo in my notes. I don't know why.
I was going to say, Isles feels very similar because he says Chongolongo, which I am assuming is meant to be his like language.
Mm-hmm.
It feels racially uncool. That he says, I think those are made up words. I don't think that those exist in any culture.
No.
I think that's just, they gave him, let's give him some words that sound like, you know, some kind of other ethnicity, you know, some other nations come up with, just vaguely exotic sounding words. And it's,
in a thick, nondescript accent.
In a nondescript accent. And it's like, it doesn't really matter where he's from because this is an alien world. And yeah, it feels not great. Chongolongo as a phrase feels like it's mocking someone, even though it's like it's mocking basically everybody that doesn't speak English as a first language. It's not clear who we're taking the piss out of, but I feel ashamed to say those words.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that happens.
He does have a couple of other times where he says something like that. And none of the times is it cool to me.
No.
It's just not good. It's just not good.
No, it's not okay.
What
not
they've
okay.
done there. Niddler also says, I'm too hungry to be dead, which I just felt a very strong resonance with. So many times in my life where I feel I'm so ill that I might be dying, but at the same time, I'm too hungry to actually be dead.
Yeah, that hunger sensation, that's there.
The hunger punches going. Through. It's my tether to reality.
I'm going to get the hunger punches through on a t-shirt. That's the new slogan for this show. How do you like me now? The hunger punches through.
Wow!
Oh my goodness. So, anyway, we have...
But Ren's very upset that the woman's dead. Whatever.
Terribly upset. Isles is trying to plan a mutiny, and Ren's just there. He's just patching the ship. You know, he's been captured. He's just working away.
But something happens, doesn't it?
Yes. It turns out that...
It turns out she's not dead.
She's not dead at all, yes.
Imagine a surprise when the thing that happens, like, 1 minute into the episode turns out to not be permanent. She appears in a vision.
She does appear in a vision that she's been taken by the Dark Dweller, which is the evil creature that lives at the centre of the world.
It's just a little face in the water, isn't it?
He's a little face, and that's what creates the Dark Water. The Dark Dweller creates the Dark Water.
Okay, and why? What does he want with Tula?
Well, I presume he just wants to sow chaos and discord and pain. I think what it actually is, it's basically to try and entice Wren to bring down...
Oh, it's a trap.
Yeah, bring down the treasures. It's a trap.
Obvious trap.
Because he wants the treasures, because they're the only thing that can stop him.
And she says in her vision, only the treasures can save me.
Yeah.
So is the Dark Dweller making her say that, or somehow manipulating the vision?
I think the Dark Dweller is manipulating the vision, a la Terminator 2. To make it look like it's her and sound like it's her when actually it's not. It's the Dark Dweller.
Is now a good time to admit that I haven't seen Terminator?
Oh, well, I know what we're doing tonight. That's
trust me, you don't.
Amazing film. You've got to watch Terminator. Got to watch Terminator, Terminator 2, and that's it. Stop.
You'd be amazed at the things people have said to me that I've got to watch, which I've managed to not watch.
Yeah, I know, but it's because you don't like doing what people tell you you've got to do.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. Yep.
This is another bit of your behaviour I predicted on this episode.
God damn you, I hate that!
But anyway, there is a... They're basically... Wren and Isles come up with a plan. Or Wren and Niddler steal a coffin.
I've written down coffin. And I don't remember what the coffin was about.
Well, basically, I think the coffin was to try and protect them from the Dark Water.
Yes. So they get in a coffin.
Yes.
And get thrown overboard.
Yes.
So that they can go in the Dark Water.
Yes.
But if it's that easy to defeat the Dark Water that you've just got to be inside a wooden box, wouldn't that have been a good way to just protect yourself?
Well, I mean, no, because they're still trapped in this box going into the water with the Dark Water. It's not like, you know, that's... It's not like the Dark Water's allergic to coffins, Liz. That's...
Is that what you got from what I said?
Yes, pretty much. That's how you defeat the Dark Water through a coffin.
No, I'm saying put a lid on your boat.
No, because the Dark Water will swallow your boat, bring it down to the depths, and then you're fucked.
Then you go out and you go, hey, mate, put us back up, would you?
Well, you don't know that, though. You don't know that's what happens. Yeah. Maybe that's not always what happens. Maybe just...
it does happen this time, though,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It does happen this time, because there's a reason to come down. Any other old fucker, like, if he's just capturing random fishermen, he's not going to be like, you must try and escape. He's like, okay, I'm going to eat that one.
I'm just saying... As a tactic, you might try putting a lid on your boat. Anyway.
Anyway, so they have this mutiny. Ios doesn't get away. He's still there. But this is the thing. Bloth says, I've lost the treasures as a result of your mutiny. How is he a mutineer? He's not part of the crew.
Yes.
He's a prisoner. That's not mutiny.
He does seem to be somewhat confused on the topic of mutiny. Although pirates, I know they do sort of like co-opt everybody they've captured into... have taken part on the boat, don't they?
Yeah, but he's still a prisoner at this point. Yeah, he's not like a trusted crew member. This isn't mutiny on the fucking Bounty, you know?
It's a strange choice of words.
It's just weird. It's like, I'm going to lock you up at night, you know, you'll do slave labour for me, and, you know, you're clearly a prisoner, but you're mutinying against me, you bastard.
I can't believe you didn't obey me.
I can't believe it. Who'd have thunk it? Anyway, so we cut to Wren. Then he's now going through the Dark Dweller's domain.
Yes.
And gets warned by a vision of Tula to beware the Dark Dweller.
I've also written down floaty skull chorus.
Why are you laughing? I didn't write down floaty skull chorus. I can't remember what that is.
There were some floaty skulls, I think.
Okay.
And they said something to him.
Oh, right. Maybe they warned him to beware of the Dark Dweller.
I got confused
in my notes. This is it. But so anyway, he comes.
This is the part where I started to fall asleep. Okay. And I need you to be on the ball.
He finds Tula, and Tula says, you need to give me the jewels.
It's possibly the most obvious trap you could ever have. It's you've got the thing that you should die to protect, and one of your gang has been captured, and they say to you, you've got to give me the thing first and then I can come with you. And you know that that is the baddie saying it. Yeah. It's an obvious lie.
Yeah. And then he actually finds, he sees through this charade, finds the actual Tula and goes, well, I knew something was up when she didn't know that the jewels were in my pouch.
Yes.
And it's the old switcheroo thing of, trick them into thinking they're somewhere they're not and catch them out.
Yeah, the whole she didn't know where the jewels were, that felt a little bit like that's the most basic way you could have done that.
That's the thing, it's how they catch out the T-1000 in Terminator 2. It's Arnie catches him out by saying to the kid, what's the name of your dog? And he goes, Max. And then he goes on the phone in the kid's voice, what's wrong with Wolfie? Because the dog's barking. And, you know, the kid's mum goes, Wolfie's fine. He hangs up the phone. And Wolfie, you know, kid's mum isn't kid's mum. It's the liquid metal Terminator. It's fucking what's-his-face from X-Files.
Spoilers for Terminator. The film I'm allegedly going to watch.
You are. Spoilers for a 23-year-old film.
It's at all.
Yes. 1997.
It's the year of Titanic.
Yeah, is it 97? I'm probably going to not. Someone's going to correct me now. Someone's going to say it's way earlier than that. Yeah. Definitely. Anyway, so yeah, we've escaped the. There's another trap though down there, which I the Dark Dweller reappears again. It's something else. And in the end, he gets out by using the Treasures of Rule to beat him back and they come back up and it's Iles is like, you always know how to make an entrance. They escape from Bloth somehow. It's that old, power of friendship bollocks that sees them through.
Aren't you the one that's supposed to be standing up for this?
I am standing up for this, but this is not a fantastic point, this one, to end in, because this should be a two-parter where they're captured and then the second one there's swashbuckling and fighting and all that jazz.
Is there any swashbuckling in this show? Because yeah, there's been two episodes with minimal swashbuckles.
Well, there must have been some swashbuckling. I mean, look at the intro, listen to the music. This is pure swashbuckling.
The intro I love, but it is more exciting than the actual show, and it promises a lot more than this delivers.
Well, I think I'm not sure we picked like the most sort of high octane episodes.
I picked the most
high octane episodes, but I think that's just the way it is. That's just what it is. So there we are, the Pirates of Dark Water. Liz, how do you like me now?
I didn't like this, Will. I know it will come as a shock after this episode that the listeners have listened to, but I did not enjoy this. I really felt like the characters were bland, and I just wanted it to deliver more on the things it was setting up. You know, I wanted to see swashbuckling, you're right, I wanted to see amazing pirates and fighting and Ren actually getting some of the treasures by kind of being smart, not just by, everything looks bad, but actually he's incredibly strong and he's done it.
See, now to me, I can forgive the minor missteps show. Because I love the fact that it's a different thing. It's not like this is just the high seas on Earth. This is a place with orange skies and weird alien landscapes. It's a harsh world. It's a dying world, Liz.
Mm.
And to commit to that, and rather than it being a case of, this is a nice place and just this thing's coming along to destroy everything, that this is a world on the edge. This is a world about to collapse. You know, there's next to no people left here because this dark water spread and we've got to save this world. You know, that I like that. I like that. And I agree. I think this promises more than it delivers.
Mm.
But I think this is still a good show.
Okay. Well, you can say that. We'll have to agree to disagree.
Indeed.
As always. As always.
Well, there we are. Liz, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon.
If you like grainy, out-of-focus shots of the type of stuff we watch, follow us on Insta at HowDoYouLikeMe. And if you want even more piss-poor attempts at engagement, try out our Twitter at HDYLMN1. It's like a postcode, but longer and harder to remember. And if you're a fan of the show, remember to rate, like, share, subscribe, whatever. And if you didn't like the show, come find me on social media, you coward!
This is a Standard Nerds podcast.